Blog Talk Radio.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is?
Julie.
Julie. Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is?
Anybody? Anybody?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Woo-hoo! Leslie, guess what today is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Hump day!
It's hump day.
Hump day!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Donaldson Files here on the Bassam News Radio Network. I'll be joined by Dr. Larry here in a couple of seconds. In fact, here he is on the line. Dr. Larry, how are you doing?
I'm just fine. How are you tonight?
Oh, not too bad. We got so much to talk about.
Yeah, we sure do.
Yes, we do. All right. And by the way, this is the Resistance Hour here on the Wednesday Resistance Special. We'll be following this show and this network will be the Resistance Hour with Dr. Larry and Tom. And Dr. Larry, who do we have on our guest for the second hour tonight?
Well, I'm afraid that our guests have all been occupied with other commitments, and so my guest is you, and your guest is me.
Well, but don't worry about it. Like I say, it's not like we're going to run out of things to talk about. And we do have a lot to talk about. We've got Afghanistan. We now have OPEC basically telling Joe Biden that, hell no, we're not going to increase oil production. We like the fact that you're paying a hell of a lot higher prices than what you did last year and put it in our pocketbook. Retail sales are down. We can review the new world order that may no longer be in existence and everything else. So all I got to say is it's almost a question. Where do we begin? Yeah, I got to say this. I remember about a year and a half ago, I made the observation that a specific congresswoman out of New York wasn't exactly the brightest bulb out there. And I remember people saying, how dare you say that she's not the brightest bulb out there? And, of course, these are people who basically were the same people who used the word orange orangutan to describe President Trump and Mr. Magoo to describe Mitch McConnell. Well, I don't know about you, Larry, but can you simply say to me that we can at least make this observation and the brightest are not exactly ruling over us today?
I sure don't see very many in this administration. They don't seem to know who our friends and who are our enemies, and that's always dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Yeah, absolutely. And I got to say, it's, I kind of view this in two different ways. Either we had two choices, really, in a way. We had one. This was a point made by Austin Bay today. We could have set up guard duty. And what he meant by that, small remnants of troops, keep tabs of the, have that big Air Force base and maintain some presence in that particular area, or B, you would have thought about putting a orderly withdrawal in place where you got your people out. We got those Afghans who fought with us out before we decided to, take off. It seems to me we kind of took off first and then worried about everything else second. Whatever you can say, the one observation I can make right now is that if you could do anything completely ass backwards, this was done completely ass. Your thoughts?
Well, it is so monumental. Some of the commentators are saying it's the most monumental mistake in foreign policy in American history. It's hard to make such comparisons based upon historical assessments, but the fact is, it's certainly the worst mistake that's been made recently, because it has so many ramifications. I mean, not only do you have ramifications of the on the fate of all of the Americans that are still in the country, and that number keeps rising. The last two nights ago, we were told that there were approximately a few hundred, and then by 24 hours later, it was 15,000, and later on, they're saying it might be as many as 40,000, and not only that, but they didn't know where they were. They didn't know. They had no census of the Americans that were in country, and they didn't even know who they were or where they were or how many there were. That's number one. Number two, they have all of the people that were the Afghans that were helping over 20 years of American in presence. I was going to say invasion, which I guess is really pretty accurate. They are facing tonight, they are facing death or a very slim, almost invisible chance to relocate to the United States. There's 600 of them apparently that have been successful. And that number also keeps growing. The last number I heard was something in the range of 60,000. The people who really know, will know who those people were by name and by location are the Taliban, because they have now taken over all of the records that we had at the program air base, and they actually have better records apparently than our own military and State Department do. But so that's the vast human slaughter that we're probably facing. And then the second level is the international implications of the fact that the Taliban have really reinstituted or repopulated the entire terrorist group of the extreme Muslims, who many of whom apparently were Guantanamo Bay inmates. Some of them were anyway. And thousands of those have been released from prison by the Taliban. And we are now facing another decade of the same kind of threat that produced 9/11 for America and countless other terrorist events throughout the Western world. And also that probably means the revision of extreme Muslim tech sects such as Al-Qaeda, which was pretty well defeated before. And then there's the final blow, if you will, that allows China and Russia particularly to capitalize on the show of weakness that this represents for the American military and the American international position, where we are now, they already are recognizing the Taliban governance of as the legitimate government of Afghanistan, and they are also Chinese now have an overland access to Iran, and they are in the process of making the case that the Americans are declined, and that they've been claiming it all along, and this is a good example of it. And they are probably now in the position of taking over most of South Asia, in addition to the South China Sea, and in addition to their movements even into Manchuria. So it's just colossal. It's so big that we don't even know how big it is.
Yeah. Hold on. This is Tom Donaldson, Donaldson Files here on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, this particular hour or this particular segment will be brought to you by
Napa Know How.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back here at the Donaldson Files on the Bachelor News Radio Network. If you want to listen to this show every day on thebachelornews.airtime.pro, here's what you need to do. Go to thebachelornews.airtime.pro. We're on at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the morning and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the afternoon every day. Also on StreamYard.com, TuneIn and iTunes, and Spot 5 and Anchor. We're everywhere and everywhere. So, and don't forget, the Resistance Hour is on 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every day. So, and it's also 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So just to let you know, the two great programs, the Resistance Hour on Wednesday on the Bachelor News Radio. All right, let's kind of follow up. You made a pretty good point of a geopolitical aspect. Kind of follow up, you know, with China and what it means at this point. And kind of, you know, what you were talking about.
Well, China is extremely methodical and very coldly rational in its quest to regain what they believe is regain their position as the prominent, preeminent power of the in the world, and that includes a multifaceted version of all of their initiatives. For example, they're pushing very hard to create the yuan as a reserve currency for the world, dethroning the U.S. dollar. Now, the average person might not care about that or might think that's kind of trivial, but the fact is the only reason that we are able to print money and make it and make all of those pieces of paper that we are printing to cover our deficits, for example, and the reason that those pieces of paper can actually provide buy things and be accepted as legitimate currency are because the Bretton Woods Agreement from 1944 makes the United States dollar as the reserve currency of the world trade. Well, if the yuan becomes the another reserve currency, and if in fact it's cheaper and it's much more flexible in a lot of ways, then a lot of our whole fiscal structure starts to crumble, and we all of a sudden have all of this paper money that it's like Germany in the 1920s, you know, take a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread, so, and that's just one of their things, and we could go into a lot of detail about that. It's being supported, by the way, by the International Monetary Fund, which is now admitted China. China was considered up until a few years ago as a developing country, and it had less voting power in the International Monetary Fund than let's say France or Canada. In fact, it had less than Brazil. And then all of a sudden, with American support from the Obama administration, they were allowed to become a member of the elite, the governing group, and they suddenly went from their position of 20th or so to the number two, and second only to the United States. And then, of course, that in turn gave them the prestige to be able to go out and make a lot of international contracts with, particularly lately, with South America. And it's just, they are, if we're not careful, and we're not being careful, they are going to win that war. And if they win that war, they will have depleted our capabilities beyond anything that any even a war could do. And yet the Americans just keep on printing money and making getting into deficits that are just unsustainable. So I mean that's only one of their gambits. Other gambits are that they make all these deals with undeveloped countries, and when they can't repay it, then they take over their assets and they put their own people in charge. That's happening all over Africa, and much of it's already happened over much of the Far East. So we could go on and on. I'm sure I'm down in the weeds now. I don't want to get too
here's the thing coming into play, because we have been missing, you're putting a big picture on all of this. Because basically, let's talk about like the Silk Road. The Silk Road with China, basically, Africa and Asia. But also we're looking at, they're moving into Pakistan. They're moving, and there are tons of minerals in Afghanistan, which they're going to have access to. And we did.
They're already trying to buy it.
Yeah. already trying to buy it. So, and here's the thing that comes into play is that it matters because, quite frankly, I mean, here's the thing. Let me put it in this capacity. I mean, this was 11 hours ago on CNN. It makes you kind of wonder, you know, all right. We are talking $1 trillion. We're talking iron, copper, gold, rare earth minerals, which, by the way, including lithium, that are needed, let's say, in our computers. And, of course, if you want to buy a electric car, it's going to be needed in that way, which basically means when you buy your next Tesla or Delta down the road, you know, you're going to be buying it with Chinese labor, or I should say Afghan labor controlled by China.
Well,
just to give you...
It's also, I mean, here's another factor. Mostly what sustains the Afghan economy, such as it is these narco dealers and growers, and they don't have a lot of capital. So what China does is come in and buy their product, which gives them the capital to expand and to all start living the big life, and then China takes their product and smuggles it into the United States, and we now have what is it? Something like 5 million white people have disappeared from the census list in the United States, and it's mainly because of overdoses of fentanyl and other drugs, many of which are, almost all of which, are provided by China. So, I mean, that's another way that they're trying to get to us. It's so ingenious and so evil that it's almost beyond conception. They have no value of our human life in the least. They have no moral limits.
Well, you know, I'm going to make a point here because I'm going to, you know, I made this point last year, and I'll make it again this year, because when we talk about national socialism or fascism, you know, we have this, it's almost as if, okay, we think of Adolf Hitler, funny guys, as I say, funny guys running around and funny guys running around with funny-looking mustaches, little military uniforms up and down. What we don't see is the face of fascism in the 21st century. And I made the point about a couple of years ago, namely, if you want to see what Hitler looks like today, China is what is the new national socialism. You know, communism as we understood it, as long, you know, even the Chinese don't believe in it. What they do believe is a nationalist version in which they, you know, and we need to understand when I use the word national socialism, because while there is a quote-unquote capitalist side to China and their development, the reality is that most of these companies and most of these billionaires in China are pretty much under the control of the government. And there's actually been some recent crackdowns on some of these people, you know, as kind of a reminder who's the boss. In other words, as long as you do what we ask you to do, you can make billions of dollars. But if you don't,
but it better be yen.
And this is the point. I mean, and this is the thing that comes into play is that, you know, I've always said to me, China's theory is, you know, my theory of China is they want to be able to militarily control the Western Pacific. That's why they want Taiwan, you know, Hong Kong. They want to be kind of like, from a military aspect, control the Western Pacific. But they also want us to basically pay them tribute. And in fact, you know, we hollow ourselves out and pay them tribute. to be, like I say, second and third banana, you know, third power. In other words, they want us demoted, and they want to be controlled by all aspects, and they want their ideology to be controlled. And point that, you know, what if you would have said to me 20 years ago, no, this is not going to happen. But if you look at today, it's one of the best articles I've ever seen. You know, saw was, we are importing China's values. China's not importing ours. And you see this, you know, with some of our leadership. You see this with the tech companies that have their own, you know, their own version of social media credit. And this is, you know, kind of the way they want to control the world, per se.
Well, they go a lot farther than that, even. I mean, if
hold on a thought. You got a quick break here, and we'll follow up on that point. This is Tom Donaldson, Donaldson Files, here with Dr. Larry here on Resistance Hour and the Donaldson Files.
Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. I start laundry at 8. At 10, we go for a walk. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, here at the Donaldson Files on the Bachelor News Radio Network. And also, for this particular segment, is brought to you by...
Since Buffalo Wild Wings is always open late, here are a few things you'll enjoy. Buzzer beaters, wings in 21 signature sauces and seasonings, and great deals on food and beer. Grab select domestic draft beer starting at $4. $4 shareables like street tacos, fried pickles, chili queso dip, mozzarella sticks, and roasted garlic mushrooms, and deals on select liquor and house cocktails. Phew, that's a mouthful. Catch all of the late night action. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Offers and participation vary. Please drink responsibly. Void where prohibited.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the Donaldson Files and the Bachelor News Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to this show every day at 11 and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the BachelorNews.airtime.pro. All right, go ahead and follow up on the thoughts that you were talking about.
Well, I think the most bizarre and unfortunate ploy of the Chinese has been to subvert people that ended up being having the president of the United States. I called during the during this past campaign, I called Mr. Biden, the Manchurian candidate, after the book and movie of some time ago, in which the Chinese, in that case, made a ploy to infiltrate the American political system, such that they ended up with an American president candidate that was really a puppet of the Chinese. I'm afraid that there is a massive history of corruption that not only involved Mr. Biden's son, but also himself, because if you look at some of the evidence that's been put forward, particularly by Peter, what's his name? He wrote a book recently.
Peter Schweitzer.
Schweitzer. if you look at that case, it's almost ironclad that that there is a definite relationship between the Bidens and the Chinese, that were it ever to become front page news in the United States and not be buried by the current media, that they would that he would be impeached and perhaps sent to prison. And I think that that has a lot to do with the way that all these things are happening. Everybody's wondering who's actually drawing the blueprint for the actions that that Mr. Biden is taking as executive actions, and nobody seems to know exactly who it is that is writing the scenario for all of these really crippling dictates. And I think that there's a lot of evidence that that the Chinese are in fact very instrumental in a lot of that. I mean, who in the world would have said that we, as we finally achieved energy independence, that we would suddenly cut off not only stopping the pipeline, but also outlawing the use of public properties for producing oil and natural gas. I mean, that in itself is enough to make somebody pretty darn suspicious. So, and I'm not really a conspiracy type of guy, and I've never really been very much of a conspiracy theorist, but I must admit that this whole thing, it just fits such a neat pattern that it's hard not to believe.
Let me put it in this, I guess a good way to say it, somebody once said, I think I read this once, but it makes sense. You know, today's conspiracy theories in 6 months will become tomorrow's truths. And we certainly have lived in a world that conspiracy theory, it's almost somebody once, I kind of once commented and jokingly, but I begin to think it's true. We're all living in Alex Jones's conspiratorial world. But let me, maybe another way of putting it would be, would a Manchurian candidate behave any differently than Biden has behaved when it comes to the policy toward Russia or China? And that's the part
of the United States. I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot, much of what he's doing is weakening the United States to the point where China, it will become the predominant military power without even trying. I mean, without even having a war or having to prove it. He's putting us into such a debt situation, and who's buying a lot of that debt? The Chinese are.
Yeah.
For example.
Well, I mean, here's some of the things I wrote a while back. I wrote this originally in 2019, and I repeated it about a couple months ago. And I started this way. A good friend of mine told me a few years ago, after the collapse of the Soviet Empire, how surprised he was that communism ended up as National Socialism. And then I went ahead and said, "Well, here's the thing: if you don't buy into the aspect,
you might want to tell the audience what National Socialism is in colloquial terms.
Okay, it's called
Nazism.
It's Nazism, exactly. And again, this is a point that, as I made earlier, is that to me, fascism has always been one of those things that would always come from the left, it would always be done in the name of the people. And you were not going to get funny-looking guys with mustaches yelling, Z Kyle. And it's going to be done in a gradual way. But in the case of China, what does China have? Well, China has concentration camps that holds millions. They use the social media to control the population. And the present president of China is the George Orwellian 1984 Big Brother. While the Chinese allow profits to be made, the state controls all, and the companies, they make money, but they serve the state. It is state corporatism. China views itself as the new center of the universe with all nations bowing to it. I always ask the question what the world would be like if China was the most powerful country in the world. It will be a poorer world, less free world, and we'll see other nations and groups of nations copying this national socialistic movement. For years, we've seen our own elite who've admired China. Just listen, and this is what Michael Bloomberg said during the primary. This is what he said. I mean, it's a question, what is a dictator? They don't have a democracy in the sense they don't have, that they have general elections. That is true. But they, quote unquote, have a system where a small group of people points ahead. They churn over periodically. If you go back and look at the last two or three decades, there have been a number of positions of people who have the same power as the present leadership. And I thought, you read this and you listen to this, and it's like you literally have a group of elites in our own country that, quite frankly, like what they see in China because they don't have to deal with these, this inconvenient thing called democracy. They can simply use the power of the state, the power of the bureaucracy to rule. It's becoming a scary thing because, these are not, how many times have you heard, Donald Trump be a fascist, a Nazi? And if somebody once observed, the last time I checked, he didn't stop the election from being held. People are, nobody went to concentration camps to oppose him. And he certainly didn't use the power of the of his friends in the social media to censor others, because he was the one that ended up getting censored. And like I said, you get this situation where you talk about conspiracy, but would we have seen a government behave that much differently if, let's say, they weren't, if they truly were the Manchurian candidate? Your thoughts?
Answer, I think, is no, because I think that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what the communication line is, but it's pretty clear that it's certainly deleterious and destructive to the United States. And that is, in order for China to become the prominent, preeminent country in the planet, their chief adversary is us, the United States. So if anything that can dethrone, so to speak, the United States not only in prestige but in power, actual power, which would be monetary power, military power, and also increasingly technological power. In order for that to happen, the United States has to decline. At least it really makes it faster for the Chinese if the Americans decline at the same time they are rising. And that's exactly what seems to be happening. I mean, why have you got Wall Street that's so excited about this administration when, in fact, we've got, this huge financial debt that's accumulating faster than anybody ever thought possible, and you've also got the problem of energy dependence that we thought was over, and is now he's going to begging the Saudi Arabia for more to pump more gas so that his inflation doesn't increase, and the Saudis are saying you go fly a kite, and you take whatever dimension you want to take. Why are they so interested in China, and why are they so reluctant to get out of China? If you got Nike that says China, we're all China. Well, the reason is because these short-sighted American capitalists are seeing the huge market potential of the largest population in the world, and they just can't see beyond the next dollar. And
well, hold on, that's not right there. Hold on. So we're going to follow up with that after this break. This is Tom Donaldson with Dr. Larry here on the Donaldson Files on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
You might know me. I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And this particular last segment is brought to you by...
Since Buffalo Wild Wings is always open late, here are a few things you'll enjoy. Buzzer beaters, wings in 21 signature sauces and seasonings, and great deals on food and beer. Grab select domestic draft beers starting at $4. $4 shareables like street tacos, fried pickles, chili queso dip, mozzarella sticks, and roasted garlic mushrooms, and deals on select liquor and house cocktails. Phew, that's a mouthful. Catch all of the late night action. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Offers and participation vary. Please drink responsibly. Void where prohibited.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the Donaldson Files on the Bachelor News Radio Network. You can call right now if you want to participate anytime over the next hour and 20 minutes. You call in 646-929-0130, 646-929-0130, and give your opinion on what's going down. Do you think America is in decline? Do you agree with what we're saying? Do you disagree? If so, call in right now, and we'll even let you comment. Even if you disagree, which I can't believe you would, because we are two of the most brilliant people out there. All right, let's kind of follow up, Larry, with some more of your brilliance.
I'm running out.
Yeah, but let's go back to the OPEC side. This to me is an interesting aspect, because we essentially were becoming exporters of the energy, of fossil fuels. We literally were becoming exporters. And all of a sudden, that's not. We had the Keystone Pipeline be derailed almost immediately. We had, no more drilling on public lands. And we literally have seen something like a 15-20% drop on a daily basis on fossil fuels in the United States. And we're now, again, exporting from OPEC, exporting from Russia, things that we were actually exporting ourselves. And you make a fascinating point here, because the entire premise was the Green New Deal, to save the planet, save the environment. But I think the Biden administration has figured out that people may talk about saving the environment, but they sure don't like paying an extra dollar at the gas pump to do it on a daily basis. And when you're sitting there begging OPEC, would you please help us out a little bit? I'm not sure what's – it's starting to look pathetic. We're supposed to be a great country, and here we are – begging people for resources that we have plenty of ourselves. It doesn't make sense to me. Your thoughts?
Well, it doesn't make sense if you're trying to stabilize and elevate and cultivate the United States. But if your goal is to secretly defraud the United States and add to its decline, then it makes perfect sense. You do everything you can to hurt the American economy, the American way of life, American institutions, including taking your military and telling them that they have to spend their time in classes about critical racial theory instead of military strategy, and you have to take you start getting a big increase in your military admit your military recruitment from people who want transsexual operations, which they will get free in the military and be out of commission for 18 months. If that's what you want, if you want to degrade the military readiness of the United States, you do things like that. And that's what's exactly what's happening. And now, is Biden smart enough to figure out all this? I don't think so. But the Chinese as a group are. They've been doing it for a whole generation.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the, cause, like I said, I'm going to go back to to this OPEC side of the equation because quite frankly, you know, again, like I say, it's pathetic that we have to beg, but it's even worse as a, you know, like I always made this observation. If you become dependent upon like solar and wind, or you have a ton of electric cars, you need a lot of rare earth minerals, which a good portion of is in China or controlled by the Chinese. You have to literally remember that when a lot of these wind turbines or solar panels are manufactured in China. And I always said to myself, the one advantage of having an oil field, natural gas field, a coal mine, or even a nuclear plant, you can't move those to China. You can't take a coal mine and send it to China. You can't take an oil field and move it to China. It's a rather stagnant thing. And it's a, you know, and I'm, you know, and to me, it's not, you know, cheap energy helps, is another feature, you know, the cheaper the energy is just another reason why you would want to keep manufacturing here in the United States if you got access to cheap energy. If you make it more expensive, you know, that's, you're taking away one more reason not to have energy. So, you know, and so the, and so the, I'm just like to say, it just flabbergasts me that, you know, this is not rocket science. But it does show that we are ruled by some of, well, I'm going to call it the worst group of elites or leadership class in my lifetime. You know, some, and we can, you know, we look across the board. Our scientific class, which we'll get into the, you know, we're going to expound more on this in the second hour, or I should say during the resistance hour with Dr. Larry and Tom. We look at our military leaders. We look at our business leaders. We look at, you know, our academia class, our scientific class, and certainly our political class. And then literally these, I mean, I don't know, you and I, you know, like I say, you've lived longer than me, and I've lived, you know, this is my seventh decade. But can you really sit back and say, and we've had people like, you know, Bob Livingston on the show. Can you sit back and say, you know, Nancy Pelosi compared to, let's say, a Newt Gingrich when he was the Speaker of the House, or or even, let's say, Nancy Pelosi, you know, or even Bob Livingston, you know, his years in Congress. Your thoughts?
Newt Gingrich says that he can hardly believe the way that Nancy Pelosi has violated the Constitution and aggregated power into one office, meaning her own office as Speaker. So, you know, that's really, I think, the key to a lot of this from the Americans that are involved, and that is power. If you get enough money, then money doesn't continue to motivate you. If you get enough money, if you get enough prominence, and you get enough ego gratifying types of attention in the press and in the general public, then fame does not motivate you either. The thing that's left is power. And what is power? Power is the ability to make other people do what you want them to do. And there are two ways to do that. One is coercion and the other is cooperation. And if you have the ability to coerce people into doing what you want them to do, then that is a much more a much surer and much more potent motivator than cooperation. And so that's really what's behind a lot of the push for this change in America. And what stands behind what is the American ethic? The fundamental American ethic is freedom and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, there are those people in this world who are not very interested in my pursuit of happiness. They're only interested in their pursuit of happiness because they think that if they can make me do what they want me to do, that will make them happy. And that is not the general ethic of the United States. Mostly the United States it is the ethic, by the way, of most of human history. You've always had the dictators and the tribal leaders, and this whole idea of democratic government where people have a choice in choosing who is going to lead them and what they're going to do, and have the ability to dethrone the people that are not to their liking. That's all very new. But that's also critical to the American ethic. So if you want to take over America, you've got to get rid of this whole thing about democracy. So how do you do that? Well, you got one of the greatest strategists in Western history is Karl Marx, and Karl Marx said, among other things, if you want to take over, the first thing you start doing is trying to segregate people into different little groups. You get as many boxes as you can, and you try to get them to the people in each box to feel very defensive and very hostile to other boxes. So that's, in America, that tends to be racism. You get the black people against the white people, and the white people against the brown people, and the brown people against everybody else, and so on. And then what have you got in critical racial theory? You've got exactly the same thing. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to get people into little boxes, that each of which is against the other, so that, you know, it's that old divide and conquer idea. And that's exactly what they're doing. And that's only one example. There's a whole philosophy of, if you want to degrade America, you've got to get rid of the institutions that support freedom and self-determination. It's the only way to do it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. But here's, like I said, this is a much deeper issue, because I tried to make this, point a little bit yesterday, and I'm going to kind of, with the Swamp Girl, and we were talking about this, and I think we need to kind of follow up going into the second hour of this, because again, if you wanted to destroy within, you wouldn't have done anything different as being done with on the education front, which you've just kind of talked about, the critical race theory, these aspects that come into play here. It's almost as if we're going to tear the whole thing down. And we see this, like, a good example would be this, and we're going to, is crime. If somebody said to me, how do you, for the past year and a half, we've had a grand experiment, and we basically find out if you don't enforce the law, if you tell people you can shoplift, they're going to shoplift. If you tell people, we're going to defund the police, we're going to cut back on the police, and we're going to tell police don't do your job, crime goes up. But in the process, you're basically destroying those very communities that are the most directly affected. Most of them tend to be poor communities. It's almost as if somebody decided, we're going to tear this whole place down. And maybe a question I'm going to throw back to you, and I want you to kind of start thinking about this. But here's the thing that I find fascinating to me is, is anybody going to ever be held responsible for this disaster or these disasters? I mean, it's not just Joe Biden, but you have an entire military complex that supposedly trained the Afghan army. We've had literally intelligence. You would think that this would not have come as a surprise when you have intelligence and military in a country for 20 years, and they're like, oh, boy, this happened rather quickly. I wasn't expecting this. Should some heads start rolling on all of this? Should people be basically thrown to, or are we going to be doing what we always do? Nobody will be held accountable for any of this.
Well, the ultimate accountability in a democracy is the vote. So, if you want to get, I guess we're about out of time here. So,
yeah. Well, David, why don't we hold on to that thought? Yeah, hold on to that thought. Come right back here on the Donaldson Files on the Batch News Radio Network. This is Tom Donaldson saying goodnight to the Wednesday Resistance Edition.
Trumpet, you know it's the Resistance Hour on the Bachelor News Radio Network. co-hosts are Dr. Larry Fedewa and Tom Donaldson. And I'm Dr. Larry, and I'm one of your hosts for the next hour. We've been already on the air here for an hour, and we haven't really solved all the world's problems, but we are doggedly trying to do it. So we're going to go on with a kind of a unscripted critique, I guess, of what's happening in the world today. And Tom, what are we going to be most interested in this hour?
Well, you know, I'm going to follow up on a question that I asked at the end of my show. And this is the thing that always, you know, it's kind of is bothering me more than anything else. Namely, who's going to be held accountable for these disasters? For this disaster, someplace, somewhere, somebody's got to be. I mean, there used to be a time and place where you screwed up this badly. Somebody felt the brunt of it. And it goes back to a point like, for example, I'm going to pick on my favorite scientist, Tony Fauci, and for no other reason. Is this guy has basically botched the coronavirus science to a point where half of America doesn't believe the guy for good reasons. He's a mediocre scientist who's been wrong on every major aspect of this virus. And he's still got his job. He's still doing his thing. And we've got some generals and some intelligence officers, and quite frankly, I got to be asking myself, why are they keeping their jobs? But there was a time and place, like when Harry S. Truman basically, kind of told, General MacArthur, I'm the boss, I'm the commander in chief, and you will not disobey me, and you will not go around me, and you're going to pay that price. Say what you want to say to Harry S. Truman, is the buck truly stopped with him, and he was willing to make that move and do those things. And I like to know for the past several years, you just look at this past year and a half, the number of screw-ups we had, either it's coronavirus, by the scientific class, and still going on. Or let's say our incompetence on this whole deal. I don't know. I mean, you tell me.
Well, I think President Obama put it very succinctly. Elections have consequences, and the only way in which you're going to have people who do things that are not agreed to by the opposition is and have things done to them in retribution is if the opposition wins the election and fires them or does whatever they're trying to do. It doesn't always work. For example, it didn't work for Donald Trump because there was a hate campaign that was very effective, and he was on the defensive much of his term, but that's the only way in which it's going to happen in a democracy, and that's if the opposition votes gets the votes and therefore gets the power, and then that's how it's supposed to work. It's in a administrative state like we have now, it gets very, very difficult to implement because you have administrative state trying to as a third force trying to advance its own goals which are not necessarily or even figuratively accepted by the political class frequently. So it's the more parties you get to do in power doing things, the harder it is to make them responsible for what they did. Now, let's say you got a Republican House, Senate, and presidency in 2024. I think you could see a lot of retribution done, but it's going to.
Well, you know, I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to make a statement here because this is, you know, if there was ever a weakness in my view with Donald Trump in aspects, is that he was not quick to fire people within the administrative class or the political class he should have fired. When it became self-evident last May, for example, that the advice he was getting from Tony Fauci and Debbie Birx and others was not very good. He continued to allow them to be official spokespeople for the administration, even though he had to know he was figuring out what they're telling me was garbage. And that's what I think is, you know, to me, it's not just getting elected 2024, is that you're going to have an administration willing to start throwing people out the door. You know, you go to the Department of Justice and figure out, okay, anybody appointed by this administration, you sent them out the door. You go to the intelligence side of the committee or the military side, because people can't remember, about 200 military generals were replaced by Barack Obama. He cleaned out people that he didn't want, that wasn't going to follow his policies, who were going to be in opposition to his policies. And certainly you did not see that in a good portion of the Trump era, and you better start seeing that in the next administration if we win all those, win everything back. Because I'm going to tell you, if you don't, the same thing repeats itself. The bureaucracy keeps moving as if it doesn't have to pretend elections matter, and that, you know, that's my, you know, what do you think? You know, it's not just about winning elections. You got to start cleaning out house, because part of winning an election is doing exactly that. Your thoughts?
Well, it's more. First of all, it's more than a 4-year job to penetrate down deep enough in the bureaucracy to actually convert the actors to a different point of view, but it obviously has to start with changing the leaders of the captains of the various teams.
Yeah.
In the case of Trump, he had no background in government. He didn't know who was who, and he didn't know who the good guys were and who the bad guys were. And it took him quite a while, as it would anybody, to find out that just because the general that you made defense secretary had a cute, funny name, it didn't mean that he was going to be a guy that would follow what you wanted to have done. And the same thing with the Secretary of State and so on. He started off with a kind of deficit of prior knowledge, and he didn't trust the right people for a long time.
Well, I agree with you in that sense, certainly in the beginning of the administration, you know, that is exactly what the case was. You know, he didn't have that experience of working in Washington, knowing who to trust. But the other aspect of it is that he also represented a totally different wing or totally different, let's say, in what the political class, including those on the Republican side. And so that is it. But it's important for people to understand. You got that this has to be part of the package, that it's not just about electing people. You got to start cleaning out the bureaucracy. You got to start cleaning out the bureaucracy, or else you're going to have an issue. Why don't we take a quick break here, here in the Donaldson Files and a bachelor. Actually, not the doctor. Yes, hurry. The Resistance Hour with Dr. Larry and Tom.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri, was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Since Buffalo Wild Wings is always open late, here are a few things you'll enjoy. Buzzer beaters, wings in 21 signature sauces and seasonings, and great deals on food and beer. Grab select domestic draft beers starting at $4. $4 shareables like street tacos, fried pickles, chili queso dip, mozzarella sticks, and roasted garlic mushrooms, and deals on select liquor and house cocktails. Phew, that's a mouthful. Catch all of the late night action. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Offers and participation vary. Please drink responsibly. Void where prohibited.
You're welcome back to the Resistance Hour. Sorry. Go ahead.
You're listening to the Resistance Hour on the Bachelor News Radio Network. And Tom, you were you had the floor.
Yeah.
Before the
like I say to me, the number one objectives that we have to have is got to be, like I say, we have to understand that. To change the culture, you have to change the culture of the bureaucracy, and you have to start, and more importantly, you have to rein in its power, which brings me to the other aspect, is that Congress has perfectly been willing to allow itself to have the administrative state take control over much of their responsibility. Yeah, here's a couple of stats here. For every law the Congress passed, there are 10 regulations passed by the administrative state. They, in fact, are becoming the lawmakers as opposed to Congress. And this is like Jonathan Turley brought this up. And he also added, for every time you go to court, 10 times you're going to be prosecuted or you're going to be facing an administrative from the administrative state. In other words, you're more likely to have to deal with an IRS type agent or an OSHA personality versus having to face your own jury of peers and a judge. And these are the things that are slowly eroding the very democracy that we have, where we are losing that control. And that's why I think, you know, for Republicans, this has got to be a part of any priority. Or let's say, you know, of reining in the administrative state. Because if we don't do it, history keeps repeating itself. Your thoughts?
Well, I think Trump's another problem that Trump had was that you have to have your own party behind you. And because all of those people in the Senate and the House have their own connections with the bureaucracy, because they're the people that are on the committees and they bring in these various people to testify, and that's how they, and then they have various constituent requests, and they get to know who the people are that are on the administrative side. Whereas if the president is one person, and he comes in, and if he doesn't have much understanding of who he should have in his own team, and then he also doesn't have the leadership and half of the members of the other branch of government, Senate and House, on his side and telling him, giving him good advice, telling him who's who and what's what and how it's good and what's bad and who knows this and who knows that. If he doesn't have all that institutional memory available, then he has to have it. You can't govern without it. And his problem was he didn't have that and didn't even know he needed it until, for example, he ran in his campaign. He was running against Washington, D.C. He wanted to clean the swamp. And the swamp was all these politicians, these lifelong politicians, many of whom were in his own party and who were scared to death of him. And he didn't realize that he needed those people until he got elected and found out that he couldn't do much without them. And of course, many of them remained very hostile to him, some secretly and some openly. And Paul Ryan, for example, is a good example. Mitt Romney came back. He was risen from the dead, and so on. And a lot of that is just human factor. You're talking about retribution for mistakes and for devious behavior. You have to identify it, and that's a big problem in itself. But it takes longer than 4 years. I mean, Roosevelt had 15 years, and he still didn't get it all.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right in the respect that it's going to take more than 4 years or 8 years. But you can begin the pattern, and you do so, at the leadership side of the equation, or let's say those underneath the leadership side. Personnel, there was an old saying, personnel is policy. Personnel is policy. And the other aspect comes in play is that there's a point that you kind of made, the political establishment side, is that, let's say, if you look at what I call the populist conservative side of the wing of the party, is, there wasn't exactly a whole lot of experience people on the, let's say, the Trump side of the equation ready for government, because basically it was an entirely new set of policy that was relatively new, in particular on the foreign policy side, where you had an entire political generation raised on, let's say, the Cold War, and then realized, okay, the situation has changed. A generation that, had Russia and the Soviet Empire, not realizing that China had replaced Russia in that role. But I do think it is time for, let's say, those of us to start thinking along those lines for the next time around. And I do see some beginning. I mean, you look at the Secretary of State Pompeo, he was an instrumental part of the foreign policy. You look at, Richard Grenell, who was the ambassador to Germany before working as He was not appointed. He was appointed,
interim,
but never approved. Yeah, interim. Yeah. In the intelligence side of the equation. But these are people, and what you need to start picking up that new generation of leadership that comes, from the grassroots. And maybe it goes back to the point that you and I have talked about, looking at the states. You look at a Ron DeSantis. I mean, look, right now, the Biden administration is doing everything they can to undercut Ron DeSantis because they fear him. You know, they truly fear him. But I think you look at people like Ron DeSantis or Kristi Noem or others, it's going to have to be done on a state basis. And we do get a chance to see who's for real and who's not. Who's going to stand up and who's not. Who's going to simply say, this is bad policy or bad science, and I'm not going to do it, or I'm not going to encourage it, and those who retreat. And we're getting a pretty good idea along those lines, exactly that. You know, those who stand up and those who do not.
Well, you got 19 of them, the senators that didn't stand up.
Well, you know what? We know who they are now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of think back, I mean,
starting
to me it comes down to.
Starting with the minority leader.
Yeah. Well, the minority leader may not, like I say, in 2026, his time will be up. But it's also time to start thinking along the lines of, okay, of finding that replacement. It's the same thing in Utah. You know, in 2024, there's nothing that says that Mitt Romney is irreplaceable. He is. In Alaska, you've got Lisa Murkowski, who's up for re-election in 2022. And you do have an opponent to her. You look at, let's say, Liz Cheney in Wisconsin, in Wyoming. You have to start looking in that direction. But you're absolutely correct. We got names of people who, when the chips were down, failed to perform. But that's, but it begins on the party level. Your thoughts?
Well, you have to, a lot of, the more of this you know going in, the better off you are in terms of trying to get your policies not only, first of all, you have to get many of them through Congress, not all of them, but, executive orders have become much more common now than they used to be. But nevertheless, the first problem for many things like budgets is you have to get it through Congress. But then once it gets through Congress, you also have to get it implemented in such a way as not to lose the very purpose of the legislation that you were fighting for, and it frequently gets regulated out of primacy. The bureaucracy gets a hold of it and they invent the rules and such, and all of a sudden you find that what you got through Congress doesn't seem to be reflected accurately in the thrust of the regulatory side. So, you have to have somebody that knows how to spot that and how to stop it and how to redirect it. And again, that means somebody that's been around Washington for a long time, because it's the only way you get this kind of insight. It's if you see. If you see things happen over a period of time and you see certain patterns, and since the bureaucracy is so huge and the government itself is so huge, it's very hard to get. You almost have to get insiders in that particular cabinet area or other department. So then when you get somebody that comes in from the outside and challenges the whole darn structure, the bureaucracy turns in a New York minute, they turn away from that candidate that just won, like they did with Trump, and in fact they turned against him and they started to undercut him, and it took him a long time to figure that out. In the meantime, we've got to take a break. You're listening to the Resistance Hour. on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
Go, Caleb!
Come on, hit a homer, Jesse!
Let's go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Obvious. Oh, hey, guys. Did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that.
I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You're listening to the Resistance Hour on the Bachelor News Radio Network, and now Tom is going to tell us a little bit more about how to listen to the various programs on the Internet.
Yes, you can listen to this show and other great shows on the Bachelor News Radio Network. Here's what you do. You go to thebachelornews.airtime.pro. The Resistance Hour is 1 and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every day. Plus, you can listen to us on StreamYard, iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, and iTunein.com. So you got plenty of opportunity. And don't forget, you can listen to the Donaldson Files every day at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That means if you're living in California, it's 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. So that's how you do it, folks. Yeah.
Well, I guess we're talking about the administrative state as compared to an ideal of justice and democracy, and it's a very complicated picture, and it's almost to the point where the punishment is the lack of power. If the other party that's in opposition gets elected, then your power is going to be diminished, and that's probably about as much as we can hope for. There's very few bureaucrats get put into jail for doing things that probably are pretty dishonest, if not criminal. And mm-hmm. But for some of them, that's a real punishment. But it's probably not the main thing we ought to be thinking about when we're thinking about who to vote for. It's probably not one of our major concerns, do you think?
Well, it's not. It's never one of our major concerns, but it's time to start thinking in terms of, if you're going to talk about draining the swamp, you've got to drain the swamp. You got to start thinking in those terms, because, as we found out with this past administration, the Trump administration, if you don't drain them, they'll drain you. You look at the intelligence, you look at the FBI, and the Russian collusion hoax is a good classic example where, quite frankly, again, nobody's yet to pay a price. Nobody's gone to jail. Now, those very people responsible for that, well, one of them is now the president. You know, he was, you know, Joe Biden was the vice president during, you know, when this all began. And it's not like they didn't have a clue or an idea what was going down. They did. And so when you have, you see that consistently, you know, this is, you know, and that's the reason why I say, you know, these are issues that have to come in play, because if you have a situation where you can't trust the administrative state, but you can't trust your government to enforce the laws equally, what do you have left? A lack of trust. And we are seeing this. And once that bond of trust between the people and the government, it's something that can't be recaptured. And we see this with the coronavirus. I think a good portion of our problems dealing with the coronavirus is that, quite frankly, you know, we have people who've been on record of being wrong, and they're still in power. They're still available. You know, I had years ago, I would put this one, when this thing began, you know, it was, you know, Professor Riley made this observation. He said, you know, when you're in the academic setting or you're in the government setting, if you screw up badly, you don't get penalized. I mean, we literally had models that were off by a factor of 5 to 10 times, you know, anywhere between 300 to 1,000%. Why? That's not even good for government work. And yet many of those very same people still have their jobs. And in the process, we engineered policies that just, quite frankly, are going to end up killing more people, destroying more jobs, destroying lives and communities than the virus ever would have done. And it's time for those people to start paying the price for their mistakes that have cost lives and have basically disrupted lives and disrupted communities. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to make that in, you know, and I guess maybe I should try to figure out a way how to make that into a 30-second commercial. But we are seeing it every day. Your thoughts?
Well, we're on the way to a real showdown, I think, in 2022, beginning with among others, Virginia, and I think that the key to this whole puzzle is really whether we're able to maintain our integrity of our elections. It's being roundly assaulted, and if the Democrats succeed in federalizing the rules and the implementation of federal elections, we probably will never see another Republican Congress in either house. So. But nevertheless, if they don't succeed, I think we're going to see a major turnover, starting perhaps with Virginia. There's a couple of other states too that are doing. I don't know which ones they are. You probably do.
Well, I know New Jersey's got an election this year, but that's New Jersey. And New Jersey, and let me look that up real quick while you. That's a good point. Let me ask you a question right now. We had this conversation in the past, but I want you to, what do you think? Do you think that the Republican candidate got a chance to win?
You mean in general or?
Virginia.
Well, there's a lot of angst about the current governor, and most of it's really tied in with the with the school situation. You know, he kept everybody out of school for over a year, and he's just came out with a mandate that all the children have to have masks. as they go back to school, and it's all kind of fluid. He's generally stuck by the teachers' unions, and that's not very popular in a lot of places. So,
well, no, let's follow up on that point. You know, because we had a show with one of those school board members.
Yeah, we
did. Here. And I thought it was a fascinating conversation, because we should say up front before we talk what he stated on our show. Because he's a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He's a Democrat. And he made some very interesting observations. He said, look, I've looked at the science. And he said, and I looked at the data. And he basically said, look, number one, keeping the kids out of school was a disaster. Because he had the test scores were showing the disaster side, including in particular among minorities within his school district. He also stated that there was no evidence to suggest that there was any significant issues health-wise bringing those kids into the classroom. And he even went as far as saying, you know, the masks were an absurdity. Wearing mask mandates for school children, it was an absurdity. The science didn't back it up. But he also acknowledged, it's the only way I could get these people, my fellow school board members, to agree with me to get the kids back in the classroom is by voting for the mask mandate, even though I knew scientifically it was crap. Now, he didn't use the word crap, but I'm paraphrasing him because he's a very nice, polite gentleman.
I talked to him today, by the way, and he said the same thing.
Yeah. And he said this on the air, by the way. I mean, he said this on the air. So, I mean, you can go back to the show 2 weeks ago, and he was on the air saying exactly what, we're doing. But it comes back down to the point where we're not even following this. We're not even making even pretense to follow the science on any of this. And I have to be honest with you. There are times and places where I try to swallow my tongue when I'm out in public, because I know people are scared to death of this virus. They've been scared to death for 18 months. They've been told this is the bubonic plague. They treat it as such, and it's a virus that kills 2 to 4 per 1,000. Yeah, we're talking about maybe a virus that, on the average, will kill maybe 2 per 1,000 more than the average flu season. Pandemic's very close to this, and yet, and we have people, scientifically speaking. Again, the gentleman we had on the show, Lateef, Dr. Lateef was the gentleman that we're talking about. He's your ophthalmologist, correct?
That's true. Yes.
Yeah, and
I had an operation yesterday.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, and my point would be is that. My point is, we're at a point where you have smart people who know this is BS, but they're reined in either by the fear of the people around them or the fear that this government put into this whole aspect. After the next break, I'm going to share something that is, from Twitter, from a good friend of mine, and it kind of talks about where we're at with all of this. But I'm at a point where but I'll go back to the point where sometimes I stand. It's like the other day there was a lady at, I was listening to a conversation, and she says, she was a teacher, and she said, well, they make people get shots for polio. They should make them get shots for COVID. And I almost felt like saying, COVID is not polio. One was a disease that literally would cripple you. This is a virus that 99% plus people survive with no problems. But that's where we're at.
Well, hold that thought. You're listening to the Resistance Hour on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
You might know me, I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in the 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You're listening to the Resistance Hour on the Bachelor News Radio Network. Tom, you were about to give us a surprise.
Yeah, okay, here's it. Okay, I want to kind of listen because the airlines, you know, the FAA is now saying the mask mandates that you have to go through to get on the airplane are going to last till January 2022. And here's the thing. This is from Wilfred Riley. You know, he's worked with me in the past. And this is what he states. I mean, this is what he's reporting. That his plane, because in fact, interesting enough, because I'm going to be meeting with him tomorrow on a project we're working on together with a group of other people, and he's flying, you know. So here's what he said. My plane's been delayed because some random, this is a key element, vaccinated person wasn't wearing a mask at American Airlines. He's going to have armed guard gates, take him off, and people are literally, you know, chatting just one life. I don't know what that means. This is real as happened. I am on American Airlines. I didn't see a weapon. They just hustled the guy off, and they put him on a no-fly list. And we're sitting here on the ground. Now, this goes back. There's so many things with this story. Number one, I'm vaccinated. You're vaccinated. We know that vaccinations are either A, are going to reduce the chance of getting the virus, and if you get the virus, you know, having any serious illness. Okay? So, it's kind of like any other virus. It's like a flu vaccine. It's not perfect, but it does reduce everything, correct? All right? We didn't use vaccinate with the idea of getting your life back. This is what we were told. Get your life back. Now we're being told, well, we have the Delta variant, which I'm good and little. And all of a sudden, we're back to the same old fear. We're back to the same old control. You know, it's almost like the masks are a mechanism of control. It's no longer about safety. It's no longer about because the safety aspect of the mask, you know, there's very little evidence to suggest that a cloth mask is going to protect you from a virus. All right? But here's the thing. A guy's vaccinated, you know. If you ever been on an airplane, anybody's been on a plane for like, go to the airport, you got your mask on, you get on a plane, and you fly for a couple of hours. It's not the most comfortable thing in the world. It's not the most comfortable thing. And I keep asking myself, okay, this vaccinated guy is probably believed a month ago, I'm going to get my life back because I've been vaccinated. Lo and behold, we're being told, no, you're not. You're not going to get your life back. We don't care how many times you've been vaccinated. We don't have how many boosters you're going to end up getting. And this is the credibility. I mean, this goes back to credibility, but it goes back to, you know, to a class, a scientific class that have made so many damn mistakes on this virus, impacted people's lives. And nobody pays the price. But this poor fellow who gets vaccinated is now on a no-fly zone, no-fly list. Explain that to me, people. If you're out there, call me up. Call us up, 646-929-0130, and explain to Larry and I why this is good, sound public policy, where we ought to be wearing masks until damn right until January 2022 and beyond. Just to fly an airplane. If you've been vaccinated and you do all the right things. And that's my rant, Larry, but go ahead.
There isn't any rational answer. I mean,
yeah.
The only answer is, as you said, it's power. This whole thing is now become an instrument of political power as opposed to anything scientific. It's obvious
yeah.
that science is no longer plays any role really at all. In fact, the scientists are now, the real scientists are coming out and saying the same thing. And by the way, they can't figure out why the FDA has not endorsed the vaccines that are on the market and that have been used by millions of people. And still they're dragging their heels and giving a rationale for a lot of people that they're not, that don't want to, or for some reason don't want to get a vaccination. So it's hopelessly corrupted, frankly. And if you can,
well, here's the thing. I mean,
you
yeah.
can politicize
I mean, the,
a pandemic, boy, you can politicize anything.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Okay, the FDA, okay, now they're going to say the Pfizer COVID. Now, they don't say Moderna. They don't say the others. They just say the Pfizer will get approval in January. I mean, in September. We'll get around to it. And, oh, yeah, we're now going to recommend you get a booster shot. Well, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, if you're going to approve one, why don't you just approve them all? I mean, what's this game plan? But here's the thing. How do you take this a step further? Because if you want to, yeah, about a few months ago, Johnson & Johnson, they found blood clots in women 30 to 50. And they went back, they looked at one in a million. What they ended up doing, and I remember one of the scientists who was sitting on the board said, okay, fine. Why don't we just simply not use it in that select patient, keep everybody else using the vaccine, like, for example, the elderly, keep it going, and maybe just, okay, we'll just hold off and giving it to this group until we investigate this. Well, we don't need to take the whole thing off the market. What did they do? They took it right off the market. Then they put it back on the market because they figured out one in a million shot. And at that point, the drop in vaccination rates started to occur. It comes, here's the thing. Why should people are sitting there saying, well, wait a minute, you took this off the market. Now you're putting it back on the market. You haven't approved it. You only got to approve one out of three vaccines immediately. What about the other two? And now you're telling us we need boosters. I mean, there's so many different aspects that people have been told that there's a point that the credibility has been shot straight to hell. And at this point, where's the science saying? It's the same thing where you have an advisor to Biden come out and say point blank, cloth masks don't work. And we know from the emails that Tony Fauci knew they weren't going to work. And if you look at past CDC studies dealing with the influenza virus, that there was a limitation to masks benefits. But here we are, and you have Dr. Lateef telling us, I have looked at the data, but the reality comes into play. We're doing mask mandates regardless, irrespective of the science. It's about control at this point. It's not about science. Yeah.
Why? I said, he said he got all the kids back in school, and that was his big big interest. He said that they just didn't do too well in that virtual situation, and he cited some statistics. And I said, well, what about the mask deal? And he said, I'm in the priority of their importance, because if I decide decide to go against the governor with the mask deal, and I say, you know, we're not going to require kids to wear masks in our school district.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. And by the way, let me just a quick point. You're kind of cutting in and out on your mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
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 Well, anyway,
yeah,
goes, is that better?
Yeah, perfect. Now, go ahead and repeat what you just said. Because I want people to listen to what you just said.
Yeah, he said that he's gonna fight the. First of all, his first priority was to get the kids back in school because they hadn't done very well in various tests showing that they had lost a year. In his case, not a year; it was actually only a couple of months. But even so, it had hurt their progress as far as the various subjects that were being taught. So he said he wants to, first of all, that was his priority, and he wanted to fight the battle that he could win. And I asked him then, what about the masks? And he said, the problem is if I decide to go against the governor on this, then I've got a lawsuit on my hands. I've got a big divisive issue. And I probably would lose, and so therefore I'm not going to take it on. And I said that's perfectly reasonable as far as I'm concerned, but it proves your point that this is all about power. It has nothing to do, because you know the governor in Virginia is himself a physician, so he's also qualified to make scientific decisions, but he's not doing it. He's not Ron DeSantis. He's just going along with the Democratic credo of the day. So.
Yeah.
It's all about power,
say,
and you're perfectly correct that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I mean, here's the thing. Like you say, you know, I feel bad for Dr. Lateef because he, you know, a Democrat, by the way. I mean, people should understand he is not a Republican. So this is and so I want people to understand that, you know, what he's saying, what he's doing is not based on politics. It's based on the science, as he understands it and as he's read it. And his wife is also a doctor, so it's
based on what he's hoping that he can get the kids get for the kids.
Yeah,
and that's all he can get.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, it, you know, I agree. I mean, like I said, I respect this guy even more and more, strictly because, you know, he's mainly because of his party affiliation, you know, is that he's willing to go up against the grain, unlike Northam, who should know better. But then again, you know, this is Governor Blackface, if I remember correctly. Is he not, or is he Governor Whitesheet? I can't remember.
Well,
yeah,
we're coming. We're getting close to the end here, Tom. What do we think?
Yeah.
What's the bottom line on all this?
Well, I mean, here's the bottom line. My bottom line is very simple. I'm going to begin with, you know, when I started, you know, yesterday, when I started today. You know, we are now a society, yes, I made a point, of mediocrity. We're mediocrity and supreme. And I began my point with what happened in the state of Oregon, where the governor signed a bill that there'd be no more having to prove that you're proficient in math, English, literature to pass high school in Oregon. They basically got rid of all the proficiency exams. And when I said to myself, this is the bigotry of low expectations. If there was a phrase that was used, bigotry of low expectations, where literally people are being told that are being told, quite frankly, the lower expectation. And I just say to myself, if this is where we're at, then how can we stay a great society where we're no longer expected to be the best we can possibly be, where people can screw up on a major scale, like we've witnessed with Afghanistan, what we're witnessing here with the coronavirus. And still keep their jobs. Yeah. And I think that's where, there's a time for accountability. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to be a little more optimistic. We must protect and increase the integrity of the vote, because if we allow another election to be stolen the way the last one was, there's probably no hope for the whole republic. So that's where we have to focus our efforts. And secondly, if the vote is held and it is true and it's not no cheating the way it was last time, then the next thing is we have to get the guys who are going to stand up to the challenges of restoring the republic to the direction that was going. And we can't have any more of the 19 rhinos that are going to dilute anything that the Republicans can do.
I just got a text here about what about impeaching the president. I'm not sure this is an impeachable offense, but certainly it is I'll ask you, what do you think? You think this is an impeachable offense?
What is an impeachable offense?
Let's just say, should we impeach President Biden for what he's done for the past, week or?
Well, impeachable is defined as whatever the House of Representatives decides it is, and I don't think they're going to do anything of the sort. So I suppose it's not going to be impeachable anyway. I think if you had a hostile Congress, that they would step into it legislatively and perhaps. I think he's done a lot of things that could be considered impeachable, but I don't think it's going to happen.
David, before we leave here real quick, we did have a caller just at the very last minute from Florida. I'm sorry we're not going to be able to get your comments in. I know he basically made the point briefly off air. Joe Biden's doing what he's told to do. It's a thing we can follow up on a little bit later. Sir, if you feel free to call back next week at this time between 7 and 8 Florida time on the Resistance Hour with Dr. Larry and Tom. And Larry, I'm going to let you say goodbye.
Well, we thank you for listening tonight, and we certainly wish our listeners well, and we hope that God will bless America.